All right. Now, we were talking about the Iran Road just before the break, and Fianna Fáil County Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly is very familiar with this stretch of road and has been making representations about it, which I wasn't aware of. Good to get a bit of clarity then from you, Councillor Kelly. Good morning to you. What's the situation?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, your listeners. And Greg, listen, I was just listening to the conversation there with Mary T and Kathleen and yourself there. And just on a point of clarification, Greg, I'm fully aware of this junction. And it's disheartening to hear there's another accident there, and I hope that the people in question is okay. But listen, Greg, as we know, in recent weeks there, I raised a motion regarding this corner in question and the road. Particularly regarding the safety of it. And I can, just a point of clarification, say that Donegal County Council is now going to carry out a safety assessment on this corner, and they're going to put up the adequate signage that is needed. And also that road there, Kathleen mentioned, needing resurfaced and it is deteriorated. That is something I brought to the attention of Donegal County Council as well. And we have passed this road as a council to have it resurfaced now in the coming weeks. So it will be resurfaced from the entrance there, more or less, at Coravati Woods, right down to meet the Rann Road where the resurfacing works last year stopped. So, listen, Greg, it's positive news. They are going to carry out, as I say, a safety assessment when they're carrying out these works on this corner as well, to put whatever safety measures is needed in place. So, listen, it's welcome news, and just to let Kathleen and Mary T know that going forward, Greg.
So to some extent, on some of the queries, that the pushing an open door in that the foot road is to be resurfaced and a safety assessment of the corner stack is... But to the third point from Kathleen, in terms of, you know, counting, is there any benefit in counting the amount of traffic on that road? Anecdotally, apparently it's tripled. And it's perhaps seeing way more traffic than it was designed for. Is there anything that can or needs to be done there on a long-term basis if this is going to be, you know, an established route, for right or wrong, from Ballybofey to Letterkenny?
Yeah, Greg, and I did bring that to the attention of Donegal County Council as well, and that is going to be looked at. And listen, I did request, as well as challenge stated, that we should be looking at putting a traffic counter on this road. Just determine how busy it has been getting in recent months or maybe in the last year or two in particularly. And listen, I suppose it was brought to my attention at the time, Greg, that for people that suppose aren't aware of the road, that when they plan to Google Maps Letterkenny and they're coming from the Donegal Town or Ballybofey side, the Google Maps is actually sending them down this route. Yep. So this is, I suppose, increasing the volume of traffic on that. And it's something that I've asked as well the Donegal County Council look into. How they address that, that's in their hands now. But it's something that I have my sights firmly on.
Okay.
And I will keep on top of this.
All right, thanks for the update. I appreciate it. Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly there. Now, I just want to quickly mention a competition. It's the last time I'm going to mention this today. So if you would like to, I'll tell you what's coming up. Fundamania Fairground is coming to the Brunswick Movie Bowl in Derry, Londonderry, from the 1st of March till the 17th of March. We're giving you a chance to win incredible family passes every day this week. You get a family pass for a full day, so that's unlimited fun and excitement. As I say, two a day this week. We're asking you to identify a town in Donegal from these three clues. Mary's from there, Watersford, it's a festival town. Text your answer, your name, and where you are from to 086 60 25000. You can WhatsApp that number as well. So you're invited to feel the rush on the Apple roller coaster, spin till you're dizzy on the cups, and navigate through the chaos in the bumping cars. But that's not all. You drive. Dive into a sea of excitement with the Sea Storm and test your aim at the water gun game, and let your taste buds dance with delight with our mouth-watering hot food and sweet treats. And we've got two passes a day to give away on the programme this week. Damien's with us now. Hi, Damien. Am I correct in saying, Damien, that you were the driver of the car involved in the collision on this junction at the weekend?
Yes, that's correct, Greg, yeah.
What happened, as much as you can determine?
Well, I was driving down towards Letterkenny and I was ready to turn the corner, and the man appeared out of nowhere driving another car, and there were nowhere to go.
Wow.
But the man clearly didn't see that I had a stop, he thought I was on a different road.
So you had the knowledge, but there's nothing you could do about it because he just he wasn't aware of what was upcoming.
Yeah. The man was actually lost. He was following a sat-nav, and he just thought the road had went straight ahead, and he didn't think he'd done anything wrong.
Wow.
But clearly there were no signposts. The signposts flat on the ground there.
What was the collision like, Damien?
It wasn't, that just wasn't that pretty now.
Mm. Airbags and all go off?
Sorry?
Did the airbags and all go off?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, okay. Hopefully you are okay.
Yeah, everybody's okay, but I want to touch on that. Everybody wants to fix a signpost today whenever the horse is after leaving the stable.
Mm.
It's just typical Donegal County Council. They're going to fix everything today, but it's maybe when the last accident happened would have been probably a good time to fix it.
Yeah. That driver following the sat-nav, he didn't have a chance because there was no in-person thing to notify him of this corner upcoming, and you're paying the price this morning.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, too late for you. Getty, Damien, listen, not that it's much comfort, with the car probably destroyed and what have you, but I'm glad you're okay. But as you say, you're saying this come a bit late. If those signs had been put up after the last collision, this one could have been avoided.
Yeah.
All right, exactly. Damien. Okay, listen, take care of yourself. Thanks very much for that. I appreciate it. And that's the access, that's the wonder of Highland Radio there. We're talking about an incident, and then we get to speak to the actual person that was involved in it and get their perspective. Right, fascinating. Okay. Some comments coming in here. Greg, Vinny here. Hi, Vinny. I deliver in the Ron area every day. That junction is shocking, to be fair. It's really, really dangerous. The elephant in the room with these roads, Lismonahan, Ron, Cullion, all these roads are seeing massive increases in traffic volume since the four lane works and traffic lights. The back road from Drumkeen to Letterkenny is being used as people are avoiding the disastrous four lanes. And, of course, the fact that the Bonagie Link was not built, indeed, yeah. That's how I would have known it, sort of Drumkeen to Old Town. Put in a few ramps. People not that stupid. At least it will slow them down. But listen, a sign saying dangerous junction ahead. I get where you... Maybe that will form a factor of it, that there'll be other, traffic calming measures. But signage is the basics, you know. Back to the road. Sorry, staying with the roads. The road at Tully Rap Lifford's very dangerous. A barrier would need to be put up to save cars going off the road. In terms of housing, the government needs to stop letting hedge funds buy housing estates and homes. This is how we can tackle the housing crisis. We need to stop block buying. And just in relation to St. Joseph's, great to hear Father Lorcan and John speaking out about the hospital. I hope that they will get all that they want, indeed. From Brian in Convoy, this is an interesting one. A humming noise woke us up at 4:40. It lasted 2 hours. This was overnight. I killed the electricity but could still hear it. It was so loud that we woke from our sleep. We mentioned it to the guards and they have had a few reports on it. The postman also heard it. We're wondering, did anyone else hear it? So are you in the convoy area? Are you hearing a humming noise? If you think you're going mad, you're not, because other people are hearing this too. Wouldn't it be interesting if we could get to the bottom of this for Brian? Apparently, some people phoned the guards about it. The postman heard it as well. Have you heard the humming noise in convoy? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Do you know where it's coming from? These stories pop up from time to time. We've had this a couple of times, not about convoy necessarily, but in different areas. Often it seems to be a piece of electrical equipment, you know, like a... I don't know what you're like an electric station or something humming away. I don't know what the answer to this question is, but I know there are people out there better informed than me. Most of you are, in fact. So what's the humming in convoy? It's so noisy it woke people up, and guards have been notified about it as well. We're going to be talking GAA with Brendan after these. Okay, we're looking forward to the very popular Highland Radio GAA podcast, the DL Debate. It's broadcast live and then available for podcast, and its presenter is the legendary Brendan Devaney. Hi, Brendan.
Yes, Greg.
Have you bought a webcam?
No.
Well,
I have one.
You must be on the Mrs. Laptop. This is not the normal laptop.
No, I had to get a wee one, actually. I think because I've thrown my laptop about that much, the camera got damaged. Okay. And then I do a streaming thing with smaller fish there, so I had to get a wee camera and a wee mic there and all, because my computer gets a bit of bad treatment in my car, you know.
Listen, we're going to go through some of the weekend GE action, but the question I'm very keen to ask of you is that, what is going on with Donegal here? Is Jim McGuinness keeping his cards close to his chest? Is he trying things? Maybe first half versus second half, not so much in yesterday's game, in previous games. Or is he sort of Dublin-esque, building this team towards a peak down the line? They're playing great football, enjoyable to watch, I think, anyway. But what is happening in terms of this team's development and tactically on a day-to-day basis? Is he trying stuff? Is he keeping his cards close to his chest? What's going on?
I suppose we can only guess what he is doing. And as long as the team's doing well and we're only seeing maybe patches of what he wants to do and create, it is the league. It's what the league is there for. Obviously, we want to get promoted, and we're sitting top with Armagh at the minute. This was the big game. I thought to myself from the get-go, it was always going to be a bit cagey. And I suppose maybe more about Armagh's tactics. I mean, they hit six long balls in the first half. The four we dealt with, the next two, they got one off. And it was interesting just to see their tactical play in it. We didn't really do the high press that we've been doing before and that. So I think you're right. Yeah, Jim's looking at games in different ways. And I think as long as you're solid at the back and you're playing that kind of modern brand, there's probably different periods in the game where you can maybe go after teams and change it up. I don't think any tactic on its own works in any game, because the game's going to ebb and flow a bit. You've got to be solid at the back. And then I think if you high press all the time, teams will play around you or find a way around it. So I think it has to be different periods of the game. And I think that's what you're seeing with Donegal, but should have won the match, really. Like, if we had a bit of ball in the net, I mean, Armagh still haven't conceded a goal. And I don't think it was down to them. It was more just maybe our poor finishing, missed a penal, the one off the bar in particular, a couple of other goal chances as well. Any of them goes in and we won the match. And so listen, for McGeaney, he hasn't had much success with Jim. And Jim's
But in terms of, I mean, obviously the chances were there and the options were there. But one thing you don't see this year is the team play to the very end. Do you know, like, I think just sort of going back a year or two, I can't timeline it, sort of sometimes you would feel that, you know, the team gave up on the 60th minute or whatever. I don't want to be critical of anyone, don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, that could be a game that was lost by a point as well. It could have been won, but it could have been lost for a point. But the team is playing to the very final whistle.
Yeah, listen, O'Neill's strike at the end, you might have thought that was it. But see, when you have the players of the ability of Shane O'Donnell coming on, I mean, Jimmy Brennan coming on, Jack McKelvey, you have people that can, I mean, people now don't call them subs, they call them finishers, you know, and I think that is actually a better name for them, because listen, O'Donnell obviously could have won the match, but in the end it was him that tied it up. So I just think there's so much talent out there now, and there's so many players with ability to kick the ball to the bar, subs coming on as well. So away from home, you know, when you weigh it all up, I think this will be the league final pairing as well. So it'll be very interesting, you know, how do these two teams look at each other in the league final, because we're looking at, I mean, I was in Healy Park on Saturday. Tyrone first half, absolutely shocking, and come out in the second half was like a completely different team. McCurry comes on and Canavan, so you know, Derry are just blazing it up at the minute, and we're facing them coming down the lines. And what I was looking at was if you look at the Dublin team from the weekend Saturday night too, right, the powerful long range running, I mean, it's absolutely end to end stuff. So I think there's what it's all about. Once you get to those bigger sides, you know, the fitness and the strength and the power is what it's all about. And that's where Donegal's the level they're trying to get to.
Just in relation to the relationship between the team and Jim McGuinness, if it is as you say, that, you know, that play different ways at different parts of the game, it then does point to a very strong connection of being on the same page from the line onto the pitch. That, in other words, Jim McGuinness has it in a way where he can adapt mid-game, but the players know what they want, and en masse they're able to respond to that. To be able to switch it up in-game effectively, especially when it comes down to the big games, if we start getting that right, which we are clearly then, if your theory is correct, it's quite impressive.
Yeah, and I think you must have so many strings to your bow, and that's what was on about the bench coming on. And from last year, the way we basically have maybe 7-8 players in there from last year, Greg, there's a completely different focus. Jim just builds this mentality. He did it the last time, and he's brilliant at it in terms of not just the squad, but the whole county. You know, we mix. He wants everybody in Donegal to be proud of the team and for the team then to push each other on a training every night and then go down to the games. And it's interesting you're saying about in-game management. I'm just thinking the camera went across to Kevin McStay there after Tyrone just ripped him apart second half, and you could see him shaking his head. They just had no answer for what was happening. Yeah. And sometimes when a team races at that level, that can be difficult, but that's where you need your solid defence in there first. So if you do come under pressure, that you can withstand a team maybe winning a lot of kickouts and putting a lot of pressure on you, not concede too much. And that's the key. And if you look at a team from Mayo, over the years, they've never been able to do that. And that's why they don't get that whole way of winning All-Ireland. And all the other teams have got very, very tactical. And you just see that. You see it with the performance. I mean, that was a real statement performance from Dublin the last night. As I say, our neighbours here, Derry and Tyrone, two fantastic ones at the weekend as well. And I say, Aaron Kiernan was actually in Croke Park Saturday night. He's on with me this evening as well. It'll be interesting to get his views on that game. And of course, from the Armagh perspective.
Well, that is going to be fascinating because he's probably not like you. He's looking at this from an Armagh perspective, and you're coming at it from a Donegal perspective. So, but both of you can see what's happening in the other team. That's going to be fascinating. He's on the show. Park Hilferty, he's with you as well. So there'll be a bit of crack there, no doubt. As you mentioned, Aaron Kiernan's there. You're going to be talking about what seems to be sort of an upward curve for Ulster football. On the hurling pitch, Donegal and Tyrone drew in Division 2B. There's going to be a bit of chat about that as well. And you've Michael Sticky Ward in for a chat. What's that about?
Yeah, you know, just look, Greg, I don't know if anybody's ever done this. He's won all the divisions. I think there's one more Avery player has done it as well this season. So they won Division 4-3-2-1, and, you know, he's won championships as well. It'd be interesting to see if anybody knows out there, has anybody else ever done that? I don't think. I've actually won Division 4 and Division 1. That's it. That's the two leagues I've won. So also interested to get, you know, Avery from a very interesting story. You know, they were the masters when I started playing. They were the best team in the county, and they really went downhill there badly. And it's taken them so long to get back, and now they're back at a level to compete. So I'm interested just to see, because he was at the very start of that, so he's seen it all now as well. So just a wee bit of a club focus on the chat. He's Sticky, you know, he's played for Donegal as well. He's a great lad. He's still playing yet, even though he's upwards in years. I'll let him tell us his birthday when he comes on tonight. But he said to me he came back just to coach the team, and he had a bit of a belly on him. But he says he was still better than some of the other lads there, so he ended up playing.
Nothing wrong with a bit of a belly, Brendan. Right, okay, that's the DL debate live this evening after the 7 p.m. news. Parks in with Brendan in studio. Aaron Kiernan, the Armagh legends, on there as well, and going to be a really interesting chat. Tracking, really, I suppose, the rise, the fall, the rise, and much more besides, with Michael Sticky Ward from the Ballyshannon Club. A show not to be missed, brought to you in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's in Letterkenny. Looking forward to it, Brent. Thanks so much. Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to download dinner on Saturday night. We had a brilliant night. Really rocked the cash bar, you know. It was.
Well, if you were at Dunloe, you were at Pettigo. Were you at Termon?
That's it. No, Dunloe's at Pettigo and Satanta.
Satanta, yeah. But you were raving about that. You were raving about the Pettigo one, right? So which was better? Okay, that answers the question. I think that was a particularly fun one then.
Some crew. No, but listen, it was a great night, a phenomenal season. A clean sweep of ladies underage. That was second year in a row. Obviously won the junior, went to an Ulster final. And, you know, the club, as they were saying, the Camogie, the score, the Gaelic, the hurling, you know, there's a huge amount of work. And you look at success, I suppose, with clubs, Greg, and just saying the last night, you know, the success and the pitch stuff's just part of it. There's so much happening in the club around people's involvement and friendships. And
by,
you know,
coincidence,
I
happened to see the Dunloe ladies a couple of times this year. And my word, it was the strength, but the depth. They could have. It looked like they could have fielded two powerful teams. Like whatever's going on over there.
Yeah, listen, and Greg, to clean sweep all the underage and then to do it again this year. You know, there's something brewing out there. So, the powers of Terman and Glenfinn, I'm sure, are looking over the shoulder now, thinking what's coming up. And I suppose the unions are coming back at it as well, Mavill, etc. So listen, it's always healthy. You know, even as I say, them getting back involved in hurling, and you just see from the new chairman of the GAA, Gareth Burns, you know, special focus on hurling and promoting all clubs, as many to get involved. And, you know, I suppose that's what it's about. It's about promotion. That's what we do on the show as well. We promote all aspects of the sport, which is a nice thing to do as well. Everybody deserves their bit of day in the sun, day in the night.
No, for sure. Listen, and that's why people are enjoying and continuing to enjoy the podcast. Brendan, thank you very much indeed. Brendan Devaney there. The DL Debate live after 7 this evening. And then it's available for a podcast if you're going out for a walk or a drive or whatever. You can stream it from our website, download it from there as well. Okay. Thanks, Brendan. What's your take on the second Jim McGuinness era? As I say, a lot of the conversation is not necessarily about the quality of play or where we're at. A lot of what people I'd be talking about is like, what's Jim at? Like, is he holding the cards close to his chest? Is he trying different things mid-game? Is he looking to peak at a certain point? And do you know what? It's nice when you talk about draws and earlier victories to be speaking about it in that context, because it feels positive and we're optimistic for the future. And again, brilliant performances from both Derry and Tyrone. Not easy to watch the Donegal game, though, and it was on GEA Go, and it was on the red button, was it, on BBC Northern Ireland? I don't think we've had a game yet, have we, on telly, regular telly, so far in the league. I'm open to correction on that. Was the one on TG Cahir? I'm not sure. Maybe that was on the web. Maybe that was, they had one game that was on the internet, but there hasn't been one live broadcast television show game yet from Donegal this year. Rightio, we're going to be joined by Irish Olympian Frank O'Mara. He's got a new book out, Bend Don't Break. It's a memoir of endurance, and he's going to be talking to me on the show after we take a break. Now, our next guest on the program is Irish Olympian Frank O'Mara, author of a new book, a memoir of endurance, Bend Don't Break. Frank, lovely to have you on the program. Thank you so much for your time today.
Nice to be here, Greg.
I suppose, Frank, with everything you've achieved in the world of sport and the challenges that you've faced as well and continue to face, the question is where did you find or do you find the time to put together this brilliant book?
Well, it was an exercise in acceptance for me, because for many years I didn't accept that I had this disease. Writing the book made it very real to me, and it was very cathartic.
Yeah, three times Olympian and athletics legend, as people would know. But you have Parkinson's disease, which is a progressive disorder that affects the nervous system and all parts of the body controlled by the nerves. And in writing this book, and I'm glad to hear that it was a cathartic process for you and what have you, but what is it that you want the reader, what do you want for the reader?
A couple of things. I want to live in the present. You can't worry about how you're going to be in 2 years or 10 years, how bad you might be. You can deal with that when you get there. So always live in the present. And there is hope. You know, something will come around, hang around the goal line, you pinch a goal, you know. So I want people to have hope and to live in the present.
You also talk of a treatment that you have called deep brain stimulation. I hadn't heard of this before. Is it well established, Frank, or is it a trial, or how would you frame it?
Well, you say, first of all, that I don't talk very well, and I apologise to everybody for my voice, but Parkinson's has hurt my voice dramatically. But they put two leads deep into your brain. They drill two holes in your brain. Put these leads down in there with four electrodes per lead, hook it up to an impulse generator in your chest, and I run 3.3 milliamps through my brain at all times. And when it does it interrupts poor signaling channels and forces the brain to use alternative transmissions.
Okay. Now, this book is, it's a story, I mean, even just your athletics career, sometimes you have to pinch yourself with the experiences you had and what you managed to achieve, because, you know, we are such a tiny little nation when you think about it. We're almost insignificant, but of course we aren't. But your athletics career and the experience you had, breaking records, national records, of course, world records, it must have been a most wonderful experience, was it, Frank?
It was extraordinary. Any time you put on the green jersey or singlet in our case, it's a privilege and an honour. But it's strange to me, I learned a lot from athletics, but I learned more from my defeats than I did from my victories. I don't talk about many of my victories in the book. I talk about the defeats that made me. When you do poorly in front of millions of people, you have to reconcile that with yourself. It's not always easy to come to terms with failures, but I find that they have helped me cope with this situation a lot better.
It's funny too, because you're one of many people, very accomplished sports people that I've spoken to, and I'm not sure if this is quite the way with you, but that after retirement or post-career, they do struggle to deal. Often what's at the foremost of the minds is something that went wrong or a narrow defeat in an All-Ireland final and not the glory as well. It's almost like a human condition, isn't it, that we have to, that we find ourselves focusing on the what could have beens and sometimes forgetting the amazing things that we do achieve.
Well, I think sometimes when you achieve something great, your almost immediate reaction is, well, that wasn't what I thought it would be. It's almost deflating when you win, but regrets last for a lifetime. And I think most athletes, like you said, harbor regrets. And I certainly have tons of regrets. But it is amazing how you just focus on the negative.
And then at the young age of 48, your life was changed forever, diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's. We can read it in the book, but I wonder, particularly coming from the background that you did and what you achieved, was the part of you saying, well, this can't be happening to me because, you know, I was a world leading athlete. How could this happen to me? Or how long did it take you to come to terms with that news, Frank, and how did you cope?
Well, unfortunately, my good friend John Walker, who won the 76 Olympic gold medal, had Parkinson's my age. But I didn't go very well, to be honest. I had a hard time accepting it. And I actually chased the Lyme disease diagnosis for about 2 years. Had a port put in my chest and took a massive amounts of antibiotics, which made my condition even worse. But I didn't want to believe it because I thought, how can it happen to me? But I'll tell you this, Greg, I never worried too much about why me. That was looking backwards to me. So I never indulged in why poor old me. Just get on with it.
But you did have to get on with it, and that requires adaptation and finding your pathway through a diagnosis and a disease. You know, you do have to learn, don't you, and adapt and learn to face these new hurdles.
Adapt is right. Michael J. Fox quoted as saying, your happiness is directly proportional to your acceptance and inversely proportional to your expectations. So part and parcel of accepting it, reducing your expectation. So for someone like me or you or listeners, sometimes our self-worth is caught up in accomplishment. So if you accomplish nothing on a monthly or yearly basis, you don't feel good about yourself. It's very hard to lower expectations, but you have to in terms of where you go, what you do, what you can engage in. But if you lower it too much, you fall apart. Mm. So it's magic to lower it just enough. It reminds me of running your age for 10K every year. for you to do 50-mile run, 50 minutes, you do 60-mile run, 60 minutes. And then should you gradually reduce your expectations to increase your acceptance.
In terms of your athletics career, you know, the drive, that extra 1% that can distinguish you from someone else, you know, how you cope with things, how you deal with things, your training, your discipline. As you worked through your diagnoses and in an attempt to keep moving forward and meeting your challenges head on, did you, was sort of your athletics training and your discipline, were you able to lean on that a little bit? Do you think that's helped you through your illness, or are they almost like two completely different lives?
Well, they are two completely different lives, but it did have to just to keep in a diary, logging all your runs, what you eat. That helped me because we tried a number of different medicines, and by keeping a healthy log, I could try to give feedback to my doctors and how things were going. So just as discipline, you take one race at a time, one day at a time. So all that was very helpful.
Brilliant. And the book, I've read some reviews. I haven't had an opportunity to read the book yet. And it's interesting because I think, you know, you could get a sports person to review it and they can sort of see that size of it. You could probably get someone who themselves has had a diagnosis or someone close to them. And, it you know, when it's all intertwined, but it's got broad appeal, I think, for those that like a sports book, but also those that like a story that hopefully might inspire them or to help them on their journey. Because whilst your journey is with Parkinson's, we all face different challenges in life, don't we? And maybe the same sort of rules and what might work for you can be adapted to different situations.
Yeah, I think people who suffer from long-term depression or any debilitating disease, it would help. My inspiration is to help the awareness of Parkinson's in this country. So many people don't know that DBS, deep brain stimulation, exists. It's been here for 5 or 6 years. Mm. So, and Parkinson's is not funded by the government, funded by local bake sales, whatever goes on locally. So it's an ever-increasing disease. And so I wanted to help.
Yeah, it's been absolutely lovely speaking to you, Frank. Thank you so very much indeed. And I wish you nothing but success with the book. And I know it's going to be incredibly popular, and it's available in all good bookshops and online as well. And I really, as I say, appreciate your time today. And thank you so much for joining us.
And thanks for putting up with my voice.
Not at all. I understood every single word perfectly fine, Frank. And so there was no issue there at all.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. God bless you. Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye. That's Irish Olympian Frank O'Mara, author of a book. It's called Bend, Don't Break. It's a memoir of endurance. One quote on the back here. Victory is a life well lived or a day in June, or a day enjoyed. Sonia O'Sullivan, she says, I really enjoyed this book. What a rollercoaster of emotions. Frank faces up to Parkinson's by calling on every challenge he has had on the running track. And in life, he accepts adversity head on, always finding a way forward. Sean Ogo helping. It takes an exceptional individual coming from a tiny nation on the western periphery of Europe to excel as a world-class middle distance runner, as it's a brutal and hard-fought field. And if that wasn't a superhuman effort enough, Frank's resilience is tested once again when he's diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's disease at just 48 years of age. A compelling read. So there's Sonia and Sean, two incredibly successful people in their own rights. An important election year ahead, of course, and Donegal campaigners, defective concrete block campaigners, are urging DCB homeowners to attend a meeting to have their say on what a true 100% redress scheme looks like. Michael Doherty, who's a campaigner, of course, and a former PRO of the Mica Action Group, joins us to talk through this. Good morning to you, Michael. Good to see you again.
Hi, Greg. How are you doing? Good to see you too.
It's like the mafia, isn't it? You try and leave, but we just drag you back in.
Hotel California. Yeah.
Okay. Right. It is a big year, isn't it? Lots of elections, council elections, European elections, and who's to say a general election. So why was this meeting called for the 4th of March at 7 p.m. at a Green on Hotel Burt?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, whenever I left Make Action Group 18 months ago now, my position at the time, firm position at the time, and it's still the same position, is that we were getting no more out of this government than what we'd already got. We had a scheme that was designed not to deliver 100% redress, and that we have now seen that unfold as more and more people try to, you know, either work their way through the scheme or even get onto the scheme. The difficulties, it has been fraught with difficulty the whole way through. So nothing new there. But what is new is the opportunity that comes around once every 5 years here with three elections, between local elections, national elections, and then the European elections, to hold now the opposition to account. The opposition that marched in Dublin twice with us on the 15th of June and on the 8th of October of 21, and, you know, claimed what they were going to do. What we found then difficult was that there was no proper definition of what 100% redress actually was. And that's why you've got Charlie McConlogue saying we're already getting it, Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin saying the same thing. In the Ardèche, just before Christmas time, you had Sinn Féin put a motion together for 100% redress. But what does it actually mean?
Okay,
what does
so
it mean
before
to the homeowner?
We talk
and
about
that's what
that.
We put together.
Yeah, before we talk about that, the way this is framed to me, it seems to be like, you've got as much as you're going to get out of Fianna Fáil, the Fine Gaels and the Greens. And right now, the elephant in the room is, can Sinn Féin deliver on the sun, the moon, the stars, the bells and the whistles? And to figure out what they are, so as if there is a change of government, it's, right, lads, this is what 100% is. This is what you promised. It's time to get out off the ditch, so to speak, and hurl.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about that. You know, and with regards to the earth, the moon, the stars and the sun, I think what we're looking for is very, very reasonable. What we're looking for is our home put back like for like to current regulations at no cost to the homeowner. What we're looking for is an end to, and that's the property part. The second P is the process is taken on end to end by the scheme, so you don't have pensioners trying to project manage one of the biggest challenges in their lives. The people and the support is that there's no one left behind. They're picking and choosing who they would want to give 100% redress to, even though there's no homeowner at fault here at all. And then the last one is prevention, as how do we basically put together a scenario that this crisis is never allowed to happen again to ensure that the homeowners should never have to go through this again. And secondly, that the state is never paying out billions again for what was oversights all along. And again, a tab left by homeowners to pick up that is completely impossible to deliver on.
Yeah, because it shouldn't be forgotten that that the campaign is not just for now, it is for the future, and this is driving, absolutely, hopefully, industry change, that no one else will have to go through this again. So, but what is 100% redress? That's the question. So I could attend the meeting and I could say, you know, I'm an accidental landlord with a second property that's fallen to bits, or I built a shed, or my shop is falling to bits, or my community centre is falling to bits. Like 100%, a true 100% scheme that doesn't leave anyone behind has to incorporate all of that, surely?
Yes, or exactly. And, you know, where this sort of came about was I'd watched from a distance at three lead campaign groups do their absolute best against a tide that was designed to not deliver 100% redress. And that was the Make Action Group under Lisa Hone's leadership. And then you'd Roisin Gallagher, the founder of the Redress Focus Groups. And then you have the Duracell man, Paddy Diver, and Lisa, that just keep going. Fair play to them. But the reality is we're not making ground. And that's obvious. Even in the banking group, they've done an excellent job and should have been set up for success, wasn't able to make it happen there either. So we have to go back and say, right, we tabled the amendments at the time that was designed to make the best of a bad scheme. It was never 100% redress. Mm-hmm. It was designed to make the best of a bad scheme, what we might have a hope to get under the existing government. But what we have this time in the form of the four Ps goes back to basics, goes back to grassroots, and it talks about a pure 100% redress, no less, which is what we marched in Dublin for the first time and did our best with. But again, you know, as I say, that tide was against us with existing government. And the question will be about this proposed government, and we expect Sinn Féin to be, you know, the lead element of a new government in due course this year. And you know, it's important that when it comes to then holding them to account, that we have got a proper definition. So I went about that then at the end of October, start of November. I put together the four P's as a straw horse, and then I called in Paddy, I called in Lisa, I called in Roisin to bounce it off, and we said we need to be united in this. And this is, you know, whatever we have by way of tactics to try to deliver on stuff and tackle the issues of the previous scheme, we need to be absolutely united.
So how do we describe this troika forward. Then? Is it just three groups working together? Is it one group now? I mean, how do you frame it?
You know, I think you know, each group are entitled to go and do what they do with their own teams, but it has to be against a very unified position on what 100% redress
right,
is.
Right, but just in relation to that, because politics is a complicated and an interesting mm-hmm. business, right? So in Donegal, you talk of Sinn Féin, if they're leading the next government. We've got Piers Doherty and we've got Padraig McLaughlin, who are both very high up in the party and will be under a serious amount of pressure to deliver on this, particularly Padraig McLaughlin in his own. But at the same time, they might say, right, well, listen, we're making these commitments. We're going to follow it through. But because of the fact that you can't target politics specifically, it's incredibly possible that we could have the 100% redress party competing for the same seats for people that you will want to deliver on their promises. Now, if I were, like, I don't know, I'm not inside Paul McLaughlin's mind for that matter, but it would feel like you're saying, if I get elected and we're in government, you want me to deliver on this, I'm committing to you that we will. But at the same time, you know, we've got guys out there that are trying to take my seat. How does that work? Yeah. How do you square that circle?
Yeah, well, how I square that circle in my head is that we've got, you know, within the 26 counties, we've got two particular levels of election that are of interest to us, and that's the council elections and the TD elections. At this stage, 100% redress party. And remember, these guys founded this out of the pure frustration happening, particularly at council level. And, you know, while we'll be pushing hard here for, you know, the next government to deliver, and that's the next level, that's the TD election, the general election, as you well know. But at a council election, we have a 10 Sinn Féin councillors in there, and, you know, have we been blown away by their contributions? Absolutely we haven't. So I think it's fair for the 100% redress party to say, no, we're going to go in and represent ourselves here.
So it keeps the feet to the fire at the very least, or gets representation on the council?
Yes, absolutely, and go in and make their voices heard. And I think that's completely an honourable thing to do, an incredible thing to do. But I think then when we're looking at the general election, which will end up dictating who we have in government, then we need to be convinced that we have got the opposition parties and the likes of Thomas Pringle, let's not forget him down there either, as a very strong voice and advocate and has been all along. You know, and we've had independents throughout the country wanting to do that for us as well in the other affected counties. So I think when it comes into general election stuff, then it's slightly different. You're saying, who are the people that can go into this government and have the power to deliver 100% redress? Then, you know, you have to think tactically differently.
Mm. Okay.
And that's where Sinn Féin come in.
It's been framed as a meeting. It's, you know, three groups at least coming together. It's the 4th of March, 7 p.m. at On Green and Hotel Burt. And really, it's to come from that meeting with public input, with a concerned party's input, to actually put together something very clear, and you correct me as I'm wrong going on this, that we can all say, right, this is what a true 100% redress scheme is. So if this is delivered, we have a majority of the room in favour of this. I think it's a very worthwhile exercise. But have I framed it correctly, or anything you want to add, Michael?
Yeah, no, I think that's about it, Greg. And I think it's important. You know, we need the people to rise up again this year. We rose up in 21 and did a really good job on it. But again, we were in a different situation. We give them the benefit of the doubt. We saw what they've delivered. We need to rise up in this year, and we need to make our voices very, very clear. We may end up back in Dublin. We may end up doing different things. But the starting point is to have a very clear message, first of all, from the 4th of March, that people are not lying down to what we've been given by this government. And then on the 26th of March, we will have the politicians come back and endorse it, or otherwise publicly, mic in hand, and people there to question them on it. And then this goes on to the nose of every politician that hits every doorstep in either of the elections going forward, and that's the plan for this year.
All right, fascinating, interesting approach. Thank you very much indeed, Michael Doherty there, who is a campaigner and former PIRO of the MICA Action Group. One little bit of housework. Sheila Lynch, congratulations, Sheila, from McGinn Avenue, Buncrana. You correctly answered Dunlow. I just have to collect, Caroline, is there not two family passes? So another, there's going to be another winner, okay? So I'll announce the second winner tomorrow, but Sheila Lynch, you're definitely a winner, and there's going to be another family pass for another listener who entered today, tomorrow, if that makes sense. But I'm out of time. Have a lovely Monday. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9. John Breslin's next.